Bird's Eye View is a member of the Baltimore Sports Report Network. Find more podcasts like this at BaltimoreSportsReport.com. BaltimoreSportsReport.com.
Welcome back to Bird's Eye View. When it comes to the Orioles, this is your official source for a lack of insight and for baseless opinions. Today is December 9th, 2013, the first day of the winter meetings. I'm Jake English, and as always, I'm riding on the coattails of Scott Magnus, and this is episode 60. Now, if you're listening to my voice, you're probably listening to us at birdseyeviewbaltimore.com, but it's also possible that you're hearing us in a number of different ways. The first, of course, is to listen to us at the Baltimore Sports Report Network, which can be found at baltimoresportsreport.com/network, where you can hear Bird's Eye View and great other shows in the Birdosphere. It's also possible you're listening on iTunes, and if you are, please go ahead and click a little rating and leave us a review. We'd like to know exactly how much you like or dislike the program.
No. Only good ratings.
All right, fine. And then there are a number of other ways to reach us. We're on Double Twist and Miro and Stitcher and other things that Scott will make up later. And you can also engage us socially on Google+, Facebook, and Twitter. Of course, our Twitter handle is at Bird's Eye View, B-A-L. Now, speaking of Twitter, Scott, I understand that you're cooking up a little something for the Twitter.
Well, we were able to pass 500 followers without any contest gimmicks or bribes. So,
kind of happened quietly.
It kind of happened quietly, and you know, I'm not a quiet individual. I like to be exuberant. I like to be loud, and sometimes I like to be a little racist.
That's so, probably the most polite way anyone could have ever said that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I do my best. So, in this holiday season, we're going to give something away. We're going to give something away for free. Well, not exactly free. Your time and your effort to follow us, like us, and share us in areas that you haven't done so far. So for those interested that are listening to us, that follow us on Twitter, hey, why don't you roll on over to our Facebook and like us as well? Or why don't you roll over to iTunes and put a rating in, like Jake said. Only 5 stars. Don't put any of those 1 stars. Save those for the other people, like in the Washington Nationals market. DanSnyderPodcast.com or something like that. Anybody who goes and follows us this week on Twitter, anyone who goes and rates us this week on iTunes, and anyone that goes and likes us on Facebook this week will be automatically entered, drumroll please, for a chance to win the latest edition of Orioles Magazine, which featured Manny Machado on the cover. So this was the September version of Orioles Magazine. So one lucky winner will win that. So,
also, Scott's giving away free hugs.
And you'll get a free hug if you want one.
And candy out of the back of his van.
All I can say is the hair's coming in really good right now. I'll give a shirtless hug and you'll be warm for the rest of winter.
It's a shame that we missed the Movember for this, because that really just would have set it over the top.
We're supposed to stop that?
All right, and with that,
you know, Carney really should have told me that.
Probably should have mentioned it. With that, we're going to go to your favorite and my favorite period of the program, which is the drink of the week. Scott, lead us off.
All right, I'm going tonight with a simple yet elegant seasonal beverage. I'm going with a spiked apple cider. I've combined 2 ounces of Kentucky bourbon alongside 2 ice cubes, and then topping it all off with some apple cider.
Wow, that's a really classy drink. That is a drink for a distinguished gentleman in this, the coldest time of the year. I myself am drinking 4 or 5 squirts out of wine that came out of a box.
Highly, highly sophisticated.
It's the perfect combination of cardboard, plastic, and what used to probably be grapes.
Now, what kind of red wine is that? Is that a Malbec or?
No, this is a Merlot.
Oh, this is a Merlot, of course.
I'm not sure any other kind of wine comes out in a box. Well, if it's red, it's almost certainly a Merlot.
Table wine sometimes.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a prison wine, basically.
Pretty much.
Now, there's
hobo wine.
Hobo wine in a box.
You know, That's a good idea, but if we could get goats to make wine, we'd be in business.
What about the grapes stamped by goat hooves?
Now you're talking.
Uh-huh.
Listen up, Shiroka boys. We're trying to make you a big profit here.
All right. That's it for the drink of the
week. Definitely pay more than Bert story time.
I think we've said too much.
Yeah.
But while we're talking about making a dime here or there, just for the holiday season, Bird's Eye View has jumped on the Amazon bandwagon. You may notice if you go to the website, there is an Amazon banner up top. Do us a favor if you're doing your holiday shopping and you're going to buy something from Amazon anyway. Go ahead and click through that way. It'll help us keep the lights on here. We're not really off to, you know, we're not out to make a buck off you. But it'd be awfully nice if we could, you know, stay in business.
Yeah, we're not making a buck off of you. We're not here to make a buck off of you, but we're here to make a buck off of Amazon.
Okay, I can handle that.
Yeah.
We're not going to get rich that way.
We'll make a buck, though.
No. We've made it through the drink of the week and all the other the business associated with the site. Let's do this. Let's get into the twat.
Let's do some twatting.
I feel good about what the Twitters had to offer this week. This week on the Twitter, Scott, throw some highlights my way.
Well, we actually talked right before Thanksgiving, and of course we have to go back to the Ravens Thanksgiving Day game. Well, Thanksgiving night game, actually. And obviously what exploded on Twitter and exploded across all the internet was Mike Tomlin stepping onto the sideline. And the tweets and the memes and the GIFs.
I'm sorry, did you just say memes?
Yeah, memes.
I'm pretty sure that's memes.
That's memes.
No.
And that was a GIFs or GIFs?
No. We're gonna go back to the fact that you just said memes out loud.
It's Mimi.
No, you're crazy.
It's Mimi.
No, listen to me. It is not Mimi.
It is Mimi. But 4chan told me it's Mimi.
Tell us about the memes.
Now, is it GIF or GIF?
Move on.
Okay. Well, the one that I liked the best was they had Mike Tomlin, and he was basically dancing down the aisle of Soul Train. So that was my personal favorite
That's
for the whole
good.
Week.
That's pretty good. I was down with the Mike Tomlin in the middle of a Michael Jackson video.
Okay, that's not bad. Yeah,
I thought that had some. Now, from in a serious point of view, do you think he did it on purpose?
Who cares? We won.
Thank you. Thank God. And we didn't talk about this before the show.
No.
But I'm so sick of hearing, did he do it on purpose? Did he not do it on purpose? Here's the thing. Look, I actually have some respect for Mike Tomlin, even though he's a member of the Steelers organization. And I find it unlikely that he would go ahead and do that on purpose. However, I think when you say it doesn't matter, not only does it not matter because we won, but it doesn't matter whether you meant to do it or not. He was in a space he wasn't supposed to be in, and it had the possibility of interfering with the game. So, regardless of intent or not, I still think it's a punishable offense. Now, I also feel that charging the Steelers a draft pick is a little extreme.
Okay, that's fine. My opinion is punish Tomlin, $100,000, and then send the Rooneys back to Ireland and tell them they can't leave ever again, okay?
I think that they should have made him coach.
Make those leprechauns stay in the place that they were supposed to be, okay?
You said slightly racist. Bring it down. Bring
okay.
it down. I think they should have made him coach the rest of the season from the booth. I thought that would have been great.
Okay.
He would have gotten a better look for challenges. Okay. And imagine him throwing the flag from all the way up there.
That's fine. It doesn't really matter. This was blown out of proportion.
Totally.
It's a great talking point for sports radio. I can't believe Baltimore fans were drawn into talking about this. Baltimore fans, shame on you for drawing this out and continue to talk on this. You're on notice.
All right. So there was a little Ravens action with that. But this week's game, I think, really, really took the cake as far as Twitter was concerned.
I totally agree with you. It pretty much was a lull through the whole thing. The most interesting thing at the beginning of the game was just the whole Ravens broadcast being broadcast in Spanish for those that had Fios.
Oh, really? Because I know somebody that makes fun of me all the time for having that inferior Comcast product. And let me tell you something. The broadcast came through in my native tongue for the entire game.
That's okay. It was blurry, though, for you on your side, though.
Probably a little
yeah.
bit.
Yeah. Okay. But yeah, the Spanish was... let's just say it made it worthwhile that I took, you know, 6 years
Goal!
Of Spanish. Goal! Exactly.
Goal!
All right.
Goal!
Are you done? All right.
Go.
Okay.
Go.
But in all honesty, Twitter was relatively quiet besides some belly aching and some complaining, especially for me.
Belly aching on Twitter? Get out. I know. Get out.
But the aspect of Ravens losing to Matt Cassel and Toby Gerhardt, that combination shouldn't even have the game close. But the Ravens love to keep games close and keep, keep the heartburn on Ravens fans. But the most interesting part was in the fourth quarter, of course. And we're going to come back to 2:05, where the Ravens go up 15-12 on the Dennis Pitta touchdown. And everyone is basically talking and saying, you know, thank God that Dennis Pitta came back. I'm going to throw out a few tweets here through the progress for this 2 minutes. So at 2:05, at Baltimore Chicks, Be More Chicks, posted hashtag Pitta Party. And this was a big theme. You know, everyone was very happy to see Pitta back. And everyone was like, okay, defense will come on there. We'll wipe this out for the next 2 minutes and we'll be fine. And then Toby Gerhardt runs off a 41-yard touchdown run. And we're at 1:27, which prompts response from Andrew Stetka at A Stetka of We Are Awful. And we also have at Russell Street Report stating defense, hashtag epic fail again. So good support from the Baltimore folks. We go to the next scoring drive, which was Ravens 22-19, Jacoby Jones touchdown return with 1 minute and 12 seconds remaining, which brings us to our next point from Derek Arnold at Be More Bird's Nest in all capital letters. Oh my God, what is happening?
Can I confess something?
Yes.
When that happened, I may have peed a little bit.
Okay, that's understandable.
Okay. Also, when that happened, Jacoby Jones, new drinking game. Each time the broadcast mentioned Mike Tomlin, take a hit.
Well, that's funny.
You'd be dead.
Okay, that's actually funny you should mention it, because Rich Eisen had a great Twitter thing here. So it's at Rich Eisen, for those that want to follow Rich Eisen. It's, how did Leslie Frazier not trip him? It's expensive, but effective.
Again, I feel like we should talk more before the show starts. If you want to edit me out of undercutting your point there, you can do that post.
That's okay. All right, then, so we go to Cordell Patterson's 70-yard touchdown screen pass, which puts the Vikings ahead 26-22 with only 45 seconds left. We now come to Mark Brown at Eat More SK, who also writes at Camden Chat, and he posts hashtag Los Ravens, defense es muy mierda, which is the defense is very bad.
Okay. You did take, you know, a couple semesters of Spanish. Impressive.
Yes. And from our sister wife, at Josh Roca, post, worst fourth quarter defense. Which, you know, I'm really not expecting such a foul mouth and terrible behavior, because that's kind of the attitude that I would give to, like, Ed Reed, not just our defense. All right, so then we come back, and the Ravens drive the field. And the Ravens go up 29-26 on Flacco's to Marlon Brown's touchdown pass with 4 seconds left.
Also may have peed myself a little bit.
Which brings me to Daniel Moroz at Camden Crazies. He says, I've been laughing for the last 10 minutes watching this Ravens game. I also come back to Adam Jones. For those individuals that need to follow Adam Jones, at SimplyAJ10, if you had a heart attack in the last few minutes watching this game, then I can join the club. And my personal favorite, which was Max Bucadal, at Max Bucadal, BUCHDHL. And it says, sometimes 140 characters can do no justice. And that, I think, is a perfect way to close TWAT for the week.
Well, if it's all right with you, I have a couple baseball-related tweets. I know. Bird's Eye View, the Orioles podcast, a few baseball tweets. The first is that Twitter has been rife with support for Orioles superfan Romeo Santos, who is a finalist in ESPN's Fan Hall of Fame, and he deserves the entire support of Birdland. I've actually sat in a section with him, and at first, you know, I was a little put off because he was so exuberant, but after a while...
You were put off by someone exuberant?
Yeah, I know. About the Orioles, no less. But after a while, you realize that it was like it actually came from a genuine place, and that he was out to have fun with the entire section. He wanted everybody to be as excited as he was.
And wasn't drunk?
No. That would leave that to us. But it was cool. He brought, you know, another angle to the game, and it was fun. So, like I said, everybody needs to support this guy. He has said publicly that he's really more concerned about representing Baltimore fans than he is about, you know, being there for himself. So, definitely a cool guy, and I want to make sure that we mention all the efforts on Twitter that have been made to get him into the Fan Hall of Fame.
So even though you have to go and visit the Four Letter Network's website, go ahead and do it just this time.
Why did you have to do that?
I'm just having to point it out.
All right, last but not least, the tweet of the week for me this week was also Orioles-related, and it came from Joe Guido at Guido's Gripes. And this is the tweet, and I want you to focus because I feel like it's important. The tweet was, building an 81-win team and hoping for a lot of luck is insulting to a ridiculously faithful fan base. Hashtag Orioles. Sometimes 140 characters cannot do justice to the situation. That is concise and perfect.
I think we're going to have to beg to agree to disagree on this one. So let's take a quick break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to discuss why you're wrong and I'm right.
This is going to be long. It's going to take...
It's going to be a slobber knocker.
All right.
All right. Maybe in the dumpster we will die, and also we might find, when our spirit is wide, I'll even let you open up the seams and place all of our dreams where the pendulum swings. With a story that we have never heard. Get the nerve. Take a curve, curve, curve. All right, so it's been a very busy week in Major League Baseball. We've seen major signings from Robinson Cano, Curtis Granderson, Carlos Beltran, Jacoby Ellsbury, all flying through the American League East, and with Granderson now leaving the American League East and going to the Mets, and Cano leaving the American League East and going to the Seattle Mariners. But to date now, there has been over $1 billion spent on free agency this offseason.
A billion with a B.
A billion with a B, yes. I mean, now, to put that in perspective, Robinson Cano's deal for $240 million encompasses 24% of that. But still, it's very impressive that we are seeing a amount of spending occurring here that has never been seen in baseball at this time period. Most times, you know, the winter meetings have always been the impetus for deals to happen or for the offseason to get kicked off. And, well, I hate to say it, but the offseason kicked off 2 weeks ago. And I'm not saying it's completely over, but people are falling out of the market. And the Orioles are, you know, biding their time. Let's just say that.
Biding their time. Again, second time in the podcast, I'm not sure that there's a more polite way that you could have said that.
Yeah. Look, the Orioles are making moves, okay? And, you know, they're not sexy moves, but they're moves nonetheless.
Sexy moves? Scott, they're not even remotely close. They're like your grandmother of moves.
Okay, well, I'm not sure if I can completely agree with that. There are some really good moves actually in here.
Are you really into your grandmother?
Well, I might be, but she's a pretty hot lady.
All right, I'll listen. Yeah. You talk.
The Orioles have made some decent moves. The one move I really liked was the Orioles went out and signed Brandon Webb. I think that's a great move. I think he's a quality reliever. He's got, you know, a great ground ball to fly ball ratio. This is a player that really is a great Camden Yards pitcher, at least in statistics. Now, whether he can actually come here and do what his statistics say is one matter. So we'll have to see whether Brandon Webb is a benefit.
I'll co-sign that. I actually think it's a great signing. And, you know, it was talked about when the Marlins non-tendered him that he actually had a skill set that was comparable in a favorable way to Jim Johnson.
About that, the Orioles traded Jim Johnson this past week for all of our listeners for Jamile Weeks.
I think it's actually Jamile.
Is it Jamile or is it Jamile?
It's Jamile. Listen to Baltimoreans for some great Jamile puns.
See, I just thought that was the New York accent coming out of them. I really thought it was Jamile.
No, it's people that don't know how to name their children and then don't know how to pronounce it following.
So he'll fit in perfectly in Baltimore.
Absolutely, 100%.
Great. But there will be a player to be named later, too. So hopefully he has an equally awkward name that we can try to mispronounce.
I'm pretty sure that the player to be named later will be Johnny Cash.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
Cash Gordon, stuff like that? Yeah.
Like that, yeah.
Yeah. Other free agent signings that the Orioles made this week. Francisco Peguero. He was a left fielder. He was designated for assignment by the San Francisco Giants.
So let me get this straight. We should be excited because we signed a player who was dropped by the Giants.
To be fair, he is a top 10 prospect for the San Francisco Giants as of last year. He was the number 8 prospect in the Giants organization.
Okay. And I should be excited about this.
He doesn't hit with a lot of pop, but I give him consideration to being like a Dickerson type player.
Oh, we signed a fourth outfielder, maybe.
Yeah, like a fourth or fifth outfielder, yeah.
Oh, great.
Okay. Following up on the Giants, actually, the Orioles actually also signed traded for a backup catcher from the San Francisco Giants, Johnny Munell.
Oh, fantastic. We got a catcher who probably won't crack the majors. Wow.
I started looking for stats on Johnny Munell, and I really couldn't find much.
Yeah. Did you end up crying at the end of it?
No, because I was actually surprised they traded him for cash.
Cash made another appearance in the log.
Well, I mean, I'm actually more personally surprised that the Orioles were willing to give up with their most precious commodity known as cash for some other player.
I'm going to hold back on that one. That's just too rife for possibilities.
Okay.
Where is the action, Scott? It's supposed to be the hot stove season. We barely have a space heater.
It's building up to it. Again, it's the aspect of the Orioles are not used to having to deal this early in the offseason. I mean, you consider the aspect where Dan Duquette, the year that he was hired, he was barely hired at this point 2 years ago, and there's no way the Orioles are on the same timeline or schedule as the rest of Major League Baseball. Frankly, there should be some kind of rule or outlaw or deadline that prevents these actions from occurring. Oh, wait, there is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's the thing.
Do you think the Orioles got that notice?
I think that the Orioles have a very solid plan. Now, whether it's a good plan or a bad plan, that's yet to be seen. But they have a vision, okay? They're taking it back to another era, and they're looking at what I like to call trickle-down free agency.
Okay.
So here's the plan. You target some free agents that would fit your club perfectly, all right? You study them. You make sure you got them on your board. Then you wait till other clubs with bigger balls than you signs them because they have a commitment to winning. And then you take everybody who trickles down from that, the scrubs that are left, and then you wait for the secondary market to sign those guys. And then whatever trickles down to the bottom, you sign.
Okay.
Trickle down free agency.
I like the plan, but unfortunately you're incorrect on this. The plan actually, and I've actually contacted the Orioles about this, it's called the DuckTales plan. And what actually happens is you build this ginormous vault and you fill it with gold coins. And then you walk out on a platform in a bathing suit and you actually jump off the diving board into a vault full of money and you swim around on it. And then after you swim out of it, you basically spew the gold coins out of your air through your mouth, just shooting it up like water. So it's like a pool of gold coins that you can swim around to. So this is the DuckTales plan.
Scott, I was so frightened when you started, but I'm going to give you all the props in the world for a Scrooge McDuck reference on this podcast.
Woo!
That's well done. All right, so we obviously don't have very good feelings about the way things are going so far, but, you know, we really aren't the ones that matter here, Scott. What does our dear leader Dan Duquette have to say about the process?
Well, before we get there, I want to talk about resource allocation.
I'm sorry, what?
Well, it's the two famous words so far in this offseason, which is resource allocation.
And what is resource allocation a euphemism for?
Well, it's the difference between having the DuckTales vault three-quarters of the way full versus fully filled. but the decision was made to... Let's go back to Jim Johnson. The decision was made to trade Jim Johnson due to resource allocation. And the decision was... Jim Johnson was going to cost 10% of the Orioles' payroll for this season coming up, and the Orioles just couldn't justify having a closer being paid 10% of it, and good clubs don't do that, and most clubs are only paying 5 to 6%, and you look at teams like the Red Sox and the Cardinals, and they went out there and got closers, and they spent money on them, but they didn't end up with those closers at the end of the season, so we shouldn't do exactly the same thing that they did, so we shouldn't be paying Jim Johnson that kind of money. So let's trade them away for
spare parts. I think the word you're looking for is spare parts.
The word I'm actually looking for is Jamile Weeks.
Now, can I be honest here? Jim Johnson was one of my favorite Orioles. I really like Jim Johnson. I like Jim Johnson for the way he played. I like Jim Johnson for the connection he had to the organization.
I was tempted to play, you know, the pretender, but honestly, it would have made me cry as much as me watching the Orioles Spastics tribute to Nate McLaughlin.
Yeah. That all being said, I think moving Johnson was the right move. I think it made fundamental sense to not overpay for a position like the closer, which, as we saw last year, you can save 50 games, but it's the 9 you blow that's the problem. And I don't think that's limited to Jim Johnson. Good clubs, teams that win a lot of games, they're going to have a lot of save opportunities. And none of these guys outside of Mariano Rivera are robots. And so you're going to have guys that blow saves. And if you're going to do that, don't spend $10 million plus on that player. Okay. So the number of innings he provides, the number of outs he provides, and the fact that you refuse to use him in other high leverage situations, the value simply isn't there. The problem, Scott, is if you save $10 million plus, what do you do with that money? If you go out and you make your ball club better by getting somebody else that's going to help you in a meaningful way, then we didn't lose Jim Johnson for naught. If we instead get a bunch of Jamile Weeks, that's a problem.
That's weak business.
Ouch. That's the best pun you could come up with after all that ranting I just did.
I'm sorry, the Baltimore odds are the better at this. But let me come back to this. And I think everyone agrees and everyone will say Jim Johnson was not going to be worth $10 million plus. My question is, do you let it get to arbitration and see if the arbitrator would have gone to $10 million? Or do you non-tender him, let him hit free agency, and compete with the likes of Rodney and say, go out there, and Balfour, and just say, go out there with everybody else as the closer and see how much money you can make. We think that you can only make $7 or $8 million, and then come back to us and we'll talk.
Honestly, I mean, that sounds like a very Ravens thing to do. But I don't think it would have worked for a couple of reasons.
Yeah. Why would we want to be like the Ravens organization?
It doesn't work.
They do a really poor job in free agency. $120 million for Joe Flacco? Ha, ha, ha. No, seriously.
It doesn't work in baseball, and this is why. He wanted a $45 million to $50 million deal for 4 years, and he would have gotten...
Whoa. Let's come back. Who reported that?
I have no idea.
Okay. The organization that reported that was Masson.
Okay.
Now, who owns Masson?
All right. I get the point.
Now, that being said, Rock Kabako was the one that reported it, and both you and I have high regard for Rock, and I don't think the fact that Peter Angelos owns Masson is influencing Rock's decision to put out a falsified report.
No, I don't think he's a shill. That having been said, his source... could be both.
But if you are Rock, you're on notice.
That having been said, all that aside, I think that two things would have happened. First, if he had hit the open market, he would have gotten paid a lot of money by somebody else. And two, if a team non-tenders you rather than pays you the money, there's a very good chance that you're going to stay away from them out of spite. Even Jim Johnson, who loved being
right.
An Oriole.
My concern lies in the aspect of if we go out there and get another closer, whether it be Balfour or Axford, and we go out there and spend $6 or $7 million on him, my question would be, was it really worth it? And should we have just spent the extra $2 or $3 million to get keep Jim Johnson or non-tendered him and said, let's see what we get? Would you? Was the risk worth it to not have Jim Johnson versus Jameel Weeks? Or is it Jamile? Whatever, who cares? He's not going to be an impact player for this team. He's worse than Ryan Flaherty.
I think the point that we're going to get to is basically we'll see. You know, we're going to have to see where that money goes. We're going to have to see how the guys that we get in here perform. And at the end of the season, and only at the end of the season, in the next offseason, will we be able to look back with some clarity and say that was a good move or that was a typically bad move?
All right. So you wanted to talk about comments made by Dan Duquette so far.
I want to know how the guys that are in the driver's seat are feeling about this offseason, because I have some opinions, but I'm not there. I'm not on top of things. Scotty, how are these guys feeling? What are they telling us about how the offseason is going?
Well, I'm going to start with the buzzword for so far for this offseason, which is resource allocation. This is what Duquette had to say about resource allocation. He said, we are going to use it to hire players, and if we were to trade for a player that has a significant salary, some of it would go to that. But specifically, we are going to utilize it to add some depth to our pitching staff. It's real easy to think about it that way. You take the money and redeploy it to other pitchers.
So,
plural on pitchers.
Yeah, doesn't depth mean scrubs?
It doesn't need to be scrubs.
With our luck, don't you think depth is going to mean scrubs?
When you turn $10 million into a plural, more than likely it means scrubs. More than likely, it means... That doesn't fill me with the warm and fuzzies inside. That doesn't fill me with warm and fuzzies inside. I actually thought this whole time, when the Johnson deal was kind of propagating and coming up, I thought the Orioles were going to trade him to the Dodgers, and I thought that we were going to get Ethier. I was almost positive that there was going to be a salary dump on the standpoint of the Dodgers and saying, we're going to give you Ethier, and we're going to give you half the salary back, and we'll take Jim Johnson, and you guys can have Ethier. And there's still talk of Ethier in the mix for the Orioles, but I just thought that was going to be the move. And then when, you know, Weeks came out, I was just like, really? Well, really?
To keep this from becoming the Jim Johnson show, let me ask you, what about the other big needs of this club? What about starting pitching? What do we know about the search for starting pitching?
Well, let me send in my skeletons and let's talk about starting pitching. So Dan Duquette had this to say about starting pitching. If people are expecting the Orioles to go out and sign a significant pitcher, I think it's more realistic to look for good pitchers to come up through the farm system.
I'm sorry, is he talking about growing the arms?
He is talking about growing the arms.
Is he aware of the arms that we have in the minors?
He is very much aware that Dylan Bundy is coming off of Tommy John surgery.
Right. Is he aware of all the other not ready for the major league pitchers we have in the minors?
Like Matt Hobgood and Eduardo Rodriguez and Mike Wright and...
And all those other guys that aren't going to see any time in the majors?
Well, today they came out and they said they're really high on those players. Really high.
They're really high on something.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. So, no starting pitching. That's cool. We haven't needed any of that for the last several years.
Well, hold up a second. Let's come back. And you just said grow the arms. So, obviously, if we're going to try to grow the arms, it's time to buy the bat. So, let's go to second base and talk about second base.
I like that. I like it.
So, second base, we got really worked out about Flaherty at second base, not only defensively, but he hit the ball well the second half of the season. He made better contact. He made more consistent contact. And he also played a pretty good defense. Ugh. Regarding the possible return for Brian Roberts...
The Brian Roberts watch?
No, not necessarily. I think we have some good options with the people that we have.
Yikes. Do you know that Brian Roberts' agent talked to the Yankees today?
Yes, I do know that.
Now, I don't think that Brian Roberts is a good enough player for the Yankees to replace Robbie Cano with. I think that's just a recipe for disaster. But let me ask you, if Brian Roberts starts next year as the second baseman for the New York Yankees, how terrible would that be for you?
Oh, I'm going to go fuck his wife at that point. And payback to him, I'm going to go fuck his wife.
I'm almost sorry I asked. But that's a great response. I would be right behind.
If you're an Oriole and you've been injured for multiple seasons and then you come back and they're like, oh, I'm going to go sign for the Yankees, you just go to page two and it says, fuck my wife. So I go fuck your wife, okay?
It's written into the contract?
It's written into the contract. It's on the back in fine print. Scott Magnus gets to fuck your wife.
Wow. That's, your agent is good to get that in.
Yeah. It also says Brian Roberts gets asbestos and cancer, but that's another matter.
All right, well, so second base...
Beware of the Greek lawyers. I mean, that's all I'm going to say.
Second base is another rocky start.
Fuck your wife.
I'm trying to back out of this, by the way. This is the international symbol.
Well, I want to back into it, okay?
So second base is not going the way that we had hoped, but tell me...
Oh, trust me. When I get to second base, it's going to go perfectly, okay?
Yikes. What can you tell me about the search for DH or some sort of power hitter?
Okay, so Duquette has had a strong emphasis during the winter meeting so far of looking for a left-handed bat, probably more likely through trade than free agency, which, again, Ethier comes to mind in my head. That's about it, though.
Okay. This is all very discouraging.
Yes.
I don't feel good about this. Not only am I not hearing the right things, I'm hearing the wrong things. I'm hearing things that say, this club is probably not getting any better than what it is right now. Is there any encouraging news coming out of the buzz around the winter meetings?
No.
Okay.
They're talking about Jason Hamill. But Jason Hamill's looking for a 3-4 year deal, apparently.
Oh, I'm sure he'll get that. Oh, yeah. I'm sure that Jason Hamill, fresh off of last season, they will be lined up to give him 4 years plus.
Look, if Scott Feldman's getting 3 for 30, there's a possibility that Jason Hamill could get 3 years.
It's true. It's funny because in you and I exchanged some texts the other day. As soon as Feldman signed, I feel like everybody forgot that the Orioles had some basic interest in talking to Jason Hamill again. And then it was like, oh, well, let's go back to the scrap heap. Who do we have to talk to? Oh, Jason Hamill, connected to the Orioles. I guess the question is, Scott, if there's no good news, what would need to happen? I mean, what will satisfy a fan base that is growing incredibly restless?
Sign someone of note?
No, I'm asking for names. I mean, who... Who could the Orioles sign that would just shut everybody up?
Are you talking about, like, a diehard Orioles fan or, like, the typical Baltimore sports fan? Because I don't think there's a single person out there right now that actually would shut up a normal Baltimore sports fan.
Okay, fair enough.
I think if you're talking about a baseball fan that actually follows the Orioles and looks at statistics and looks at, you know, a player that could improve it, I think you're looking at signing Shinsou Chu and saying that is someone that could hold up left field for this year and possibly hole up right field in case we want to drop Markakis. I think the typical Baltimore fan will never even give consideration to the aspect that Markakis could not be a part of this team next year. But the fact is, Markakis is coming up with a $17.5 million contract next year with a $2 million buyout. If Markakis doesn't perform better, the Orioles should buy out that contract and save themselves $15 million. And that's money that could easily go to Shinsou Chu. For a player that has a better on-base percentage right now than does Markakis. Now, that being said, Markakis could absolutely turn it around this year. I've got total faith in Markakis. But if you could have two corner outfielders with great on-base percentages, how is this a bad thing?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I think also, you know, you bring that on-base percentage discussion in, and that's a guy we could use at the top of the lineup.
We want him because he...
He gets on base.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, before we get too excited, that's not happening. It's simply not happening. There's too much money on the table. It won't happen.
Why do you have to crush our dreams?
Because it's what I do.
Okay.
What other names you got?
Okay. What about Nelson Cruz?
Nope.
Why not?
He's a cheater. Also because his defensive skills are lacking and he's declining with age. You need anything else?
Yes and no. The one thing I also point out about going back to Chu and for Cruz is they would also cost a first-round draft pick for the Orioles. Now, we had this discussion last year when Kyle Lucy was out there. And the question was, would you give up a first-round draft pick for these individuals that basically, you know, are going to have to be signed and give up a first-round draft pick? Personally, I say yes. I say yes because more than likely the players that you're getting at these positions are not going to be major league high talents.
Right. I don't want to miss out on another Matt Hobgood.
You run into that situation. Or a Brian Mattis.
Sure.
You run into these situations of you have to take these risks. These are the risks that the Red Sox and the Yankees have taken in the past. Do they always work out? Absolutely not. But the draft doesn't always work out for players either. You have just as good of a chance almost to pick up a player in the compensatory draft pick or in the second round than you do in the late first round as well. So,
or the Rule 5.
We'll get to the Rule 5 in a little bit. Hold it in your drawers, okay?
Got it.
Okay.
All right.
Can I just talk about Nelson Cruz really quickly? So there is a report going out right now for the winter meetings that Nelson Cruz has turned down a 5-year deal with the Seattle Mariners for $75 million.
Okay, here's a question. Do you believe it?
I do believe it, actually.
Okay. I have a difficult time believing a lot of things that come out. Because in the absence...
That's what she said.
In the absence of a story, I feel like the winter meetings, especially in this era of social media, it's like any hint of a rumor and suddenly everybody runs with it. And a great example is that, I mean, right now on the evening of December the 9th, you're starting to hear all those David Murphy rumors about, you know, the Orioles and the Mets were way overblown and it's very unlikely anything will happen. Well, for several hours that was the talk because somebody whispered it in a room and it was mentioned and tweeted and then that became a thing and it snowballed. I'm not sure I believe any of this crap.
But we actually have sources at the winter meeting, and one of our sources said something may happen. So,
that's good.
Watch out, people. Something may happen.
God, we are so connected. We are so in the know.
Buster Olney, you're on notice.
All right, what else you got?
Let's go through a few other names. You've got Bronson Arroyo. You got Jimenez. Both are two starting pitchers. There is no way the Orioles sign them. Sure. Absolutely no way, based off of Dan Duquette's comments.
And I think Arroyo has a better chance because it would be fewer years and less money altogether. I think he fits better, but...
Because he's old?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I agree, it won't happen.
Yeah, there's been talks of Bartolo Colon coming to the Orioles as well.
Again.
Jabba Dabuka! Yes.
And again, that goes back to another PED guy that I don't want to get involved with. It's too much baggage for me. I'm going to have a difficult time rooting for that guy. I'm going to have a difficult time anytime he wins for the Orioles, wondering if it's because of whatever he put in his body.
Bring me a solo.
Oh, jeez. All right.
Bring me fried chicken.
All right. So the point is not a whole lot of encouraging rumors that would satisfy the Orioles. Scott, what do you make of this team if they fail to make a big move?
I don't see them making a big move. I just see them maybe picking up a closer at the winter meetings, whether it be Grant Balfour or Axford or someone in that mix. I can tell you right now that if the Orioles go and pick up a closer such as Balfour or Axford, it is not going to enthuse the fan base because they're going to say, we got rid of Jim Johnson for Balfour or Axford. Where have we really gone past this point? And I think it's just a lot of twiddling the thumbs and looking at it and saying, well, we've lost Jim Johnson. We've lost Nate McClath. We've lost Scott Feldman. Have we really gotten better?
I think it's a fair question. I think that the 2014 offseason is a real crucial time for the franchise because we've had two good years. And don't get me wrong, I've been waiting for those two good years for 15 years. And being a good team, you know, is obviously a good thing. We want to encourage having a good team. But we're so close to being really good that I think a lot of people are going to be really put off by what may seem to the outside observer as a really half-assed offseason.
Well, I completely agree with you. We're so close to being good. We're right there. We've got a great manager. We've got a great foundation. We've got a great nucleus. But something's holding us back. Something is impeding us. There's some... I sense a disturbance in the force. I need to take a break. We're going to figure out what is interfering with the Orioles' success. We'll be right back.
Everything is proceeding as I have foreseen.
Well, that's some deeply dark, disturbing music. I think it's time we talk about Peter Angelos.
You know what's deeply and darkly disturbing?
What's
that? It says 1 through 3, but...
Yeah, well, that's neither here nor there.
Okay.
But I do think that...
That was like 10 years ago. Can you believe that?
Oh, I'm sorry. Are you feeling old?
God almighty, I feel old.
Yeah, enjoy that.
Yeah.
You just hold on to that. All the age jokes you make going in the other direction. Feel old.
Okay.
Embrace it.
Okay.
Peter Angelos has been in the news lately. Peter Schmuck had implied that Angelos is back to his meddling ways, saying that there had been a rearranging of the warehouse office space so that he could boot Dan Duquette out of the big office and insert himself. And the overtone of that really came from the fact that the Jim Johnson move really had business rather than the business of baseball all over it, and that it was really a Peter Angelos move, not a baseball decision. So, I mean, do you buy into that at all?
Buy into what? That he moved into the offices?
No, I think the greater point there is after 2 years or so, possibly more if you go back to McPhail, of turning over control to the baseball people for real, for the reals, us experiencing 2 years of good Orioles baseball, do you think that he's pulling it back and getting back involved?
I don't personally believe that, actually.
Okay.
I really do think it's a situation of Peter Angelos is 84 years old. I really do believe that he is preparing the team to move on to his sons. And I think this... let's go back to 2012. We never saw Peter Angelos come to one of the statue performances.
Yeah.
Lou Angelos was always coming to the statue performances and being the public face of ownership at that time.
And you know what? It's so funny because I talked to Lou Angelos. Lou Angelos?
Really?
Lou Angelos?
I did not know this. Go ahead, continue.
Oh, yeah. No, Lou Angelos. This was the 2012.
I'm actually interested to hear from you now. This is a rare instance for me.
One of the statue games, Lou Angelos was standing on Utah Street, basically unrecognized by the rank and file O's fans. And we walked over to him, and I said hello, and he introduced himself, shook my hand. We chatted a little bit about the statue. I don't remember who was being honored that day, but he talked about how great it was for the organization and how proud he was to be associated with the Orioles. And he was the nicest guy in the world. Now, I don't know anything about his involvement in the team and what he's like to, the staff and how he interacts with the baseball folk. But I mean, he seemed like a super cool guy when I talked to him.
Was he wearing a bathing suit, and was money coming out of his bathing suit?
No, he was dressed in a tie, sleeves rolled up, and
you see a bathing suit underneath his suit?
No, but when he walked, gold coins did fall out of his pant legs.
Ooh, continue.
Anyway, the point is,
do you think he eats at Jimmy John's?
No, certainly.
Okay.
I think he may own a franchise of Jimmy John's, but he doesn't eat there. But the point is, we don't know anything about Lou Angelos.
He sends Duquette down there. Damn it, Duquette, get down there and get me some Jimmy John's.
Make it snappy. We don't know anything about him. That's what I'm trying to say here. I think that Peter Angelos is often vilified. I think that he's an incompetent owner. I think that he's made himself too involved in his tenure. But I think Peter Angelos gets a bum rap in the fact that things are important to him, like the Orioles remaining local. Things are important to him, like he can't possibly not want to win. He is too egotistical for that. He also is serious about Baltimore. You know, he makes incredible philanthropic donations to the city.
Yeah, $2.5 million donation to Mercy Hospital to, support a cancer ward. He's been philanthropic in, Little Italy and stuff like that, going and supporting multiple restaurants, the museums and stuff like that, and
he kept the public pools open last
public
year.
Public pools, thank you. That's another one. But again, these are all things that only are recognized by the public. I'm sure there are a million other things that he is doing behind the scenes that he is not taking credit for, because this is an individual that does not want public attention. This is a person that strives completely 180 from public attention. He doesn't want to be part of that spotlight or atmosphere. He just wants to have his subtle hand manipulate
the background.
Now, I don't want to make it sound like I'm being an Angelos apologist. I think he's a terrible, terrible baseball owner.
Right.
I think he's awful. I think he's set the organization back years, if not a decade.
Right.
I think it's important to note he's not evil.
No.
He's not a bad man who owns a baseball team. He's a man who owns a baseball team and does it badly.
Right. He's a great philanthropist, and he's a great Baltimore citizen. He's just a terrible baseball owner.
That being said, let me get a little conspiracy theory on you, if you may. Is it possible that the finances of the organization that we are largely unaware of, okay, is it possible that the finances of the organization make things like the Jim Johnson move necessary from a baseball perspective, and Angelos has made himself available to be the scapegoat for unpopular decisions that the baseball folks make?
Okay. I understand where you're coming from. I know you're trying to spin this. But you and I both know how well the Orioles do with public relations.
That's true. They could not find their ass in a paper bag. They are not that clever. You're right. You convinced me.
Yeah. It's a great idea. A good organization could pull that move. But the Orioles are not smart enough from a public relations standpoint to pull off that kind of move.
Scott, convince me. What happened this week that would highlight how bad the organization is at making itself not look like a bunch of ass clowns?
So after the dramatic hot stove movement, the Orioles have raised season ticket prices by 5%.
Can I stop you?
Yes.
I'm not really against, well, of course I'm against ticket prices going up. I don't begrudge the Orioles for raising ticket prices for two reasons. First, it's been a few years since the last major increase in prices.
Right.
And two, I don't know about you, but I fully expected it as soon as the 2012 season came and went that they would have raised it like a mofo because
right.
people were actually adamant about buying tickets again.
I think they're in a catch-22 position here. I come back to the point that you just made, which was you're like, oh, you're expecting them to raise prices at the end of 2012 season, and they didn't. And it made perfect sense saying, okay, you're going to raise tickets, but I think that you would have got backlash saying, oh, well, look, you get one season, one winning season, and then all of a sudden, boom, ticket prices go up.
Well, of course it would be a terrible move, and of course it would be a dick move, but isn't that exactly the type of thing the Orioles usually do?
Look, the point of the matter is they hadn't raised ticket prices since 2008. It's the kind of move that needed to be made, and I understand people are upset about it, but 5% over a five-year period, that's a 1% growth over every year, that's really not that bad.
Right, so I'm trying to be reasonable about it. I've made peace with a 5% increase, but then they had to take a step further and piss me off. Scott, what happened?
Well, they decided to implement a new program, and it's called dynamic pricing.
Dynamic pricing. Now, to someone for whom that means nothing, what is dynamic pricing?
Dynamic pricing is basically what you see with, like, hotels on, like, a kayak.com or a TripAdvisor or a hotels.com, or even looking for an air flight. And what you'll see is airplanes or hotels that are in higher demand will cost more money, and when they're not in high demand, they will not be so expensive. So games that are in high demand in the future will be a lot more money, and games that are not very much in demand will be of lower money.
Okay.
Theoretically.
Before I lose my mind on the Orioles,
yes.
Okay, I'm going to try to be fair again. And let me say that this is exactly the kind of behavior that you see from the secondary ticket market.
Right.
Right? This is exactly what you get on StubHub or wherever you go in the secondary market to go get tickets. I mean, it's what you see on Craigslist. Whatever. Once somebody else gets their hands on the tickets, they can obviously charge a lot more for high-profile games, and they might take a loss just to get the tickets off their hands for less prominent games. Okay? I get it. So the team wants to get in on that. They want to make sure that if you're buying the ticket, that you go to them for that kind of crap.
Right.
Okay. That you bypass the tickets.com or Ticketmaster or whoever it is.
And, StubHub and stuff like
and,
that, yeah.
And bypass the ticketing fees to go directly to the team. Look, I get that.
Okay.
Okay. Have I been fair? Have I at least shown the good side?
Sort of. Okay. I'm going to let you continue.
This is crap. This is absolutely crap. What they're doing is they're going to gouge the regular baseball fan for tickets. They're trying to push people into buying season tickets. That's great. That's fine. What if people don't have the financial wherewithal or the interest or whatever to buy 13 games? What if somebody just wants to go to a baseball game? They're going to pay for it. Oh, it's a beautiful day for a baseball game. Oh, that'll be an extra $10. It seems disingenuous and dishonest. You want a service or a product? Here's the price. Pay for it. Oh, it's a Tuesday, so it's one price. But it's a Saturday, so now it's another price. Well, I'm going to go see a baseball game against the Cleveland Indians. That's one price. Now I'm going to go see a game against the Kansas City Royals. That's another price. It's totally arbitrary. Oh, suddenly the Cleveland Indians are leading the division, so now the game costs more because it's a primetime game, and it's going to be one that has playoff implications. So open up your wallet and bend over. That's wrong. It's wrong. And I know what you're going to say. I know you're going to say, yeah, but you're going to get a great price from the team on a Tuesday night game against the Astros. That's all good and fine. But let me ask you, Scott. This program is designed to do what?
Sell more tickets.
And?
Sell more tickets.
And make more money.
Yeah, of course.
Do you think the Orioles are going to put themselves in a position where the fans can get a better deal? Or do you think they're out to make sure that the house wins?
Well, to be fair, if we look, it depends on what model they take. If they take the model that big team markets like the Cubs and the Yankees have taken, then the house is going to win much more so than other teams. But if they take the model that the St. Louis Cardinals have taken...
I'm sorry, I'm going to stop you. If they take the same model in their business practices as the Cardinals, one of the most successful franchises in baseball...
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
That has a very similar market share and demographic to the Baltimore area.
No, that's not fair. That's not fair. Baltimore does not have the kind of market that the Cardinals have. Oh, the entire Midwest is Cardinals land.
I agree with that to a certain extent, but you also have a large demographic also that is Birdland.
All right, I'm going to ignore that. Go to your point.
Are you saying that Birdland is only segregated to a 30-mile radius, but... of Baltimore?
I'm saying the tradition of the Cardinals...
Because if you're saying that, the spastics are going to come after your ass, okay?
I'm saying that the tradition of the Cardinals fan base is more advanced than the tradition of the Orioles fan base.
You're right. The St. Louis Browns says hello.
Yes, exactly. I'm also saying the fact that the Orioles didn't have the benefit of broadcasting their games on the radio to a bunch of people throughout the country that didn't have a baseball team. That's the only way they could enjoy baseball before baseball was on TV.
Anywho, coming back to the Cardinals instance, they have set up the aspect of there are going to be certain tickets that are going to be higher priced, but there are also going to be certain tickets that are lower price. In fact, 33% of the games that were flexed actually had tickets that were $5.
How many?
I didn't actually get into a specific number, but they did mention of a 33%.
Yeah, because that's a great soundbite, and it looks great, and it looks like it's a great deal for the fans. But you know what, Scott? I would put money on the fact that those great deals...
You are going to be putting a lot more money.
...are few and far between compared to the prices that are ballooning. You want to go to a game? You want to sit in the nosebleeds? You want to sit in the last row? Great, here's a $5 seat. You want to go to a game that usually costs a reasonable amount of money? That's going to be an extra $10.
I don't think it's going to be that so much. I think it's going to be more the aspect of, oh, we're playing the Tampa Bay Rays. The price will be lower. Oh, we're playing the Milwaukee Brewers. The price is going to be lower. Oh, we're playing the Houston Astros. The price is going to be lower.
But it's going to be lower in comparison to the price gouging they're doing on the Yankees and the Red Sox and the Cardinals and whoever else that they're playing that are going to be in high demand. They're not saying the prices are going to be great because we feel like giving you a deal. You know, we go back to the Orioles in that 2012 season. I was so proud of them for September having two separate events where they said, you know what, we're going to drop prices to get asses in the seats because they couldn't fill the stadium. But they're not going to do that every game, Scott, and that's what they need to do in order to sell out every game. They're not going to take a bath just to get people in to buy beer and soda and hot dogs and popcorn.
I'm going to come back to the point that someone made earlier in this podcast, which is, let's wait and see what happens this season, and then at the end of the season, we'll make a determination of whether it was a success or whether it was a failure.
Scott, they make these moves not for our benefit, but for their own. It costs more money right now.
They're a business. They're supposed to do that.
It costs more money right now to decide to go to a baseball game on a whim. The Orioles have hurt themselves.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
By creating an environment in which walk-up sales is a deterrent to buying a ticket. And they can make more money because the people that are coming are being charged more. But
do we know still if that daytime fee is going to apply to the new dynamic pricing?
Of course it will.
I don't know about that.
The price continues to go
you don't know
up
about that
until
either.
The day of the game. Yes, that
we don't know that.
That's been reported.
That's been reported if the game is almost sold out. But if there's no tickets being sold, I would expect those prices to go down.
And how far?
We don't know that
the,
yet.
The Orioles are not
we don't know that
the
yet.
The Orioles are not willing to take a bath. Well, the way the Orioles do their business, they are not willing to take a bath on tickets.
Let's come back to this and say, let's hypothetically say they're not willing to take a bath on ticket prices. What if they're willing to take a bath on concessions?
No, they're absolutely not. Because then their vendor, Delaware North, hurts, not them.
Do they?
Absolutely.
I don't know about that. Because if you're going to have to make a certain amount of pre-prepared food, it's better to sell that pre-prepared food at a discount.
There is no such thing as a free lunch.
I disagree entirely. Let's go back to...
I'm sorry to have said that when we're talking about food. That was terrible.
I disagree entirely. Let's go back to kids' days in the dugout club. During the dugout club, the Orioles allow $1 hot dogs to be sold and $1 sodas to be sold. You know they're taking a hit on that. But yet, those are some of the most popular days, both in the concessions and in the ballpark. Are the Orioles making money there? Absolutely. And how are they making money there? They're getting the parents and the kids to come in there, and by God damn it, that kid is asking for a fucking pretzel. Well, that pretzel's not covered in the $1 thing. Well, it doesn't matter, because that kid wants a pretzel. Hey, that kid's walking by and says, I want a foam finger. Well, by God, I don't want to be dealing with a screaming kid on the way home. You get a foam finger.
Look, I get the point that you're making, but what gets the butts in the seats is not the foam finger, and it's not the $1 hot dog. It's the $6 ticket.
Actually, you know what gets butts in the seats?
Winning.
Shinso Chu.
All right, I can see that we're divided here, and I will concede to your point that it's unfair to be incredibly critical until we've seen it. However, I am incredibly cynical about the fact that in an offseason where the Orioles are refusing to do anything, they are then pairing that with news that they're going to a new ticketing price policy that has the every chance of screwing fans. Every chance. I'm sorry. They want to get more season ticket holders? That's fantastic. Win some ball games. Sign a real player and make some excitement about going to see the Orioles.
Look,
you want to put people in the seats? Sign Chu.
Okay,
a lot of people will come out to see Chu.
I understand that. But let me ask...
don't want to pay for baseball games the same way
I do
for hotels.
Okay, but let's just say it's December 9th. And honestly, Jake, quote, well, there's a lot of off-season left. It's tough, but what are you going to do? Give in? I'm not wired that way, and neither the rest of our players. I look at that they are confident, me and the rest of our guys, that we can do something to make up for the loss. We'll see. How are you going to argue with Buck Showalter on this?
First of all, I would never argue with Buck Showalter about it.
Goddamn right! We win! Yeah! Go Orioles!
However, I refuse to believe that Buck Showalter is on the side of a horrible ticketing policy such as this.
Well, I think we're too early, quote, I think we're too early into it. We're looking at everybody and who's available, whether it be free agent or a trade, and I'm personally looking from within to what I would do or where I would go. As people become available and an option for us, Dan Duquette and I talk about it. It's obviously a player's market right now, so let's face it, there are going to be some fourth and fifth starters signing for $10 or million a year times 3 years.
Scarfellman!
But that's what the game is right now for right now. So, Jake, quote, it's tough. It's an opportunity. It's an opportunity for Kevin Gausman. It's an opportunity for TJ McFarland. He's having a great year in Winter Ball. It's a great opportunity for, unquote, Scott Magnus' favorite player, quote, Josh Stinson, who we might have hit on a right time there. It's an opportunity for Dylan Bundy when he's healthy. It's an opportunity for Zach Britton, who is out of options. And it's an opportunity for Mike Wright, unquote. One of those guys that you said, who cares about because he's in the minor leagues and nobody knows about him. Quote, that's the way I'm going to look at it. I could rip off 10 names like last year who nobody really knew much about, unquote, like people that Jake were talking about, quote, or I'd never heard of, and they're saying, damn, that's pretty good. I didn't see that coming, unquote. Yeah, he's talking about Jake English here, quote, that's our job, you know, to try to evaluate that. I'm trying to figure out a way that we don't have that many save opportunities. We led baseball in save opportunities in the past 2 years. We have to do a better job at that. I mean, goddammit. How can you not read those Buck Showalter quotes and just be like, hot damn, I'm ready for some baseball next year.
I'm glad he likes our guys, because right now, looking at the roster, I'm not sure that I do.
Well, I tell you what. If you're looking for some guys, there's a Rule 5 draft coming up in the next few days in the winter meetings. So, I'm going to put my reputation on the line. I'm going to have a little challenge for you. We'll be right back, everybody.
And I just gotta keep insisting on, oh, baby, you sure do swing.
When it comes to kissing, I just gotta keep insisting on, oh, daddy, you are the king.
Baby, you've got me beat up and down, inside out and across.
All right, Jake, I'm here to challenge you to a little fantasy boss.
Oh, fantasy boss. Well, there's a lot of games to... What are you talking about?
Well, there's a draft coming up at the end of this week. It's the Rule 5 draft.
Okay.
And the Orioles have been known participants.
They have a reputation.
Yeah,
okay.
They've got a reputation of being... So, I've done a little research, and I'm sure you've done no research.
That's the way this works.
Yeah. Regarding players that actually might be picked during the Rule 5 draft. So what I've done is I've gone through and picked out various players that could be picked out of the Rule 5 draft. And I thought we could go through them and we could pick which ones we thought would be potential ones. And whoever actually managed to figure out the one that the Orioles actually picked gets to win Fantasy Boss this week.
All right. You know, it's rare, but this is a brilliant idea from you.
What can I say? I've got brilliant ideas all the time. They just often come off as very racist.
Now, let me ask you this. Of all of the hundreds of possibilities of possible candidates for the Orioles to draft in the Rule 5, what if neither of us hit?
Well, we're going to have to have a tiebreaker. We're going to have to make a determination of whether we think that the Orioles are actually going to participate or not participate in the draft. But let's go through the players, and then we'll get to the tiebreaker.
Okay.
So the first category I wanted to start with is what I'm calling the sleeping with the enemy category.
Okay, that sounds remarkably creepy, but I'm going to allow it. Go ahead.
So I came up with two players that are in the Rule 5 draft. They are both right-handed pitchers, and they both are currently in the New York Yankees organization.
Whoa, 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 whoa. There's no way we can wash that stain off of them.
Okay, Dickerson was a former Yankee.
Yeah, but these people don't have a jaunty raising the roof movement.
They might. They might have a jig, okay?
All right. I'm willing to listen. Go ahead.
Okay, so the first individual that I want to bring to your attention is an individual called Danny Barrera. He missed all of 2012 with a torn oblique and a cracked rib, but he debuts in AA last season. He has a 92 to 97 mile per hour fastball, and he also has a sinker, and he also has a slider, and he also has a changeup. The biggest issue with him is he's very wild, but at the end of last season, he did manage to have a .92 ERA and a very decent strikeout-to-walk ratio from July 1st up into the end of the AA season. The other individual I want
to... So he plays in the Eastern League? I'm sorry, I don't want to interrupt.
Yes.
Okay, no, that's good. A .92 ERA in the Eastern League, that's saying something.
For AA, that's not bad.
I like that, okay.
The The other individual I want to throw at you is Tommy Kane, Lane. He's got a 91 and 96 mile per hour fastball, mid-90s little sinker, and then he's got a slider, but he doesn't use it very often. He's also playing in Double-A Trenton. He basically has a lot of control issues as well. He had 12 walks in 14 innings, so a really high walk. So his WHIP is going to be way up there. So looking at both these players, which one would you pick, Jake?
Between those two?
Yes.
I'm going to go with .92 in Double-A. That's what I'm going
to
go with.
I think that's a good call, and I'm glad I was able to research that well. That was probably going to be my pick. I will go with Kinley. He does have a 1.383 WHIP throughout the last season in Double-A. And, you know, 6.8 walks per nine innings. And his strikeout to walk ratio was 1.64. He certainly isn't a whole lot worse. So I see both of these options as legitimate options if the Orioles are looking for a right-handed bullpen arm. Now, the question is, are the Orioles actually looking for a right-hand bullpen arm? That seems to be something that the Orioles are very strong in their minor league organization. Do you really want to have to pick this up?
Are you talking about Josh Stinson? Because I swear to God, I'll slap the crap out of you.
I may have you talking about Josh Stinson.
All right.
But these individuals would have options. These individuals are of a young age. They're 23 and 24, respectively. Both decent options. It's a question of, do the Orioles think they could actually make them work for the entire season?
Okay. So that is the Sleeping with the Enemy segment, or portion of the program. What else do you have as far as this great research you did?
Okay. My next segment is going to be called We Have the Technology, We Can Rebuild Them segment. And these are individuals that have known issues with their mechanics, but my question is, do the Orioles think they could rebuild them throughout the season and turn them into a top-notch player?
For $6 million or less.
Right. So the first individual I brought up was Brody Colvin, who is a right-handed pitcher for the Phillies. And he was a top pitching prospect in the Phillies organization, but has declined in the past 2 years. He has really, really large issues with his control. And the real reason for this is he's got a issue with his arm motion through his strike zone. He's got an above-average fastball, 90 to 92 miles per hour, a very hard curve. But again, the control is what's killing him right now. So what really struck me from this individual is you've got a top prospect here that has a decent arsenal of pitches. And with proper biomechanical analysis and also having the Atlanta Braves pitching staff now coming into the organization, is this an opportunity for this person to be looking and saying, hey, I've noticed this player before in a rivals organization. We can make it work. We can bring him up and we can turn him into a decent pitcher. The other individual I want to bring to your attention is actually from the Braves organization, and his name is Ronan Pacheco, and he's a left-handed pitcher. So he could be a left-handed pitcher replacing perhaps Brian Mattis, who, well, some people think he's going to be a starting pitcher this year. But again, he could be a left-handed option out of that bullpen. That could be a big benefit. He's left-handed, 6'6", 193 pounds. He's got a mid-90s heater, a high 70s breaking curve. So that's a massive difference in pitching. You're going from mid-90s to high 70s, low 80s changeup, and, you know, being 6'6", that ball coming out of there is going to look completely different than someone that's going to be even 3 or 4 inches shorter. So, you know, picking up that ball is going to be absolutely almost impossible. The thing that really interests me about this player is he racks up ground balls. In 48 innings, he threw his ratio for ground balls to fly balls was 3.90. I mean, wow. That's pretty damn impressive.
Yeah, that definitely is.
And 67% of the ground balls, and then he has 8.6 strikeouts per nine innings, 6.4 hits per nine innings, and a 194 batting average against left-handers. So I just look at that and say that could be Brian Mattis, but at a younger age.
Sure.
And again, it's an individual in the Braves organization. We've got all these individuals coming up from the Braves to be our new coaches. Is there a potential for it? So those are my two choices for We Have the Technology, We Can Rebuild Them. You've got two individuals with control issues. Brody Colvin from the Phillies, top pitching prospect, and Ronan Pacheco, left-handed pitcher for the Braves. So who are you going with, Jake?
I'm
going
to go with the Braves pitcher, only because I think that our pitching leadership in Wallace and Chidi will have an advantage with this guy. They will know him. They will know what to do with him. And I would definitely, of the two of them, pick this guy.
Okay, once again, stealing the pick that I did all the research for. I was really proud of this pick. So I will go with Brody Colvin, only for the aspect of looking at his pitch selection. I can kind of see him as what Jim Johnson could have been back in the day. He could be a fourth or fifth starter for this team. If we pick him up, he could be my Miguel Gonzalez of the 2014 season. So I'm going with Brody Colvin for the Baltimore Orioles.
All right, it's your funeral. Now, are all of these guys going to be pitchers or what?
No. Of course not. Just most of them. So let's break off and let's go to positional players because we like bats. We like wood. What can we say?
Yeah, but we're not supposed to grow the bats. We're supposed to buy them.
Well, in this case, let's try to grow the bats. So I've got two options here. One is Jae Hoon Ha of the Chicago Cubs.
All right, can I be honest?
Yes.
I might pick this guy just for his name.
Yeah.
All right, go ahead.
So the Orioles have a prolific history with the Cubs in doing trades and picking up players from them. Ryan Flaherty came from the Cubs previously.
Indians.
No, he came from the Cubs.
No, he came from the Indians.
You sure about that?
I'm absolutely sure.
Okay, well, I thought he came from the Cubs. But anyway.
Your point stands about the Cubs, though. Scott.
So anyway, we picked up Felix P.A. from the Chicago Cubs.
Okay, maybe we don't want to go into the history of the Cubs and the Orioles. What can you tell me about this Jae Hoon Ha?
So Jae Hoon Ha, who is of Asian descent, was actually a former catcher.
I love the fact that you clarified that for me because that's a good Irish Catholic name, and I appreciate the fact that you made that distinction.
I really wanted to say Asian descent while you had a full mouthful of your boxed Merlot, okay?
I will say that I almost sneeze red wine all over my computer, but yeah. Please, go ahead.
So, but again, I've never seen an Asian catcher before.
What about Suzuki? Kurt Suzuki?
Okay, a real Asian catcher before.
This is terrible. Please move on to the analysis.
Well, anyway, I don't think I'm going to be able to see a real Asian catcher because he was transitioned into an outfielder. But looking at his stats, you know...
The Bryce Harper model, right?
He kind of fits that same profile as Peguero, where he doesn't have much power, but he is a great left-handed hitter. And the Orioles said they were looking for a left-handed hitter. So we know the Orioles aren't going to go out there and spend money on a left-handed hitter. So, oh, Jae Hoon Ha! That's who we want for a left-handed hitter.
Okay, the fact that you favorably compared him to Peguero, the guy that we got because nobody else wanted him, I'm already a flutter. Do you have anything else to say about this guy?
No, he's a backup outfielder, fourth or fifth outfielder.
Oh, well, then I can't wait to keep that guy on the roster the whole year. Move on. Who's the other guy?
The other individual that is interesting to me is Carlos Perez, who's a catcher for the Astros. And this individual was really big in last year's Rule 5 draft, but didn't get selected. What really interests me about him is that he's got a great defensive prowess. He's got the ability to catch 47% of base stealers in AAA. He has a below average bat speed, so he's not going to hit with a lot of power or, you know, really nail the ball. But he does show the prolificity to get on base through the walk. So he's got a great eye at the plate.
So you like him because...
he gets on base.
Okay.
So looking at his stats, he's .269 average, .328 on base percentage, and a .345 in terms of slugging. Again, not great, but for a backup catcher, I'm not sure that's bad. I'm not sure if that's worse than Steve Clevenger. So for a player that can get out 47% of...
Excuse me. The pride of Pigtown, Steve Clevenger.
I understand that. But for a player that can take walks... I'm not sure that's a bad thing. And also, to be a great defensive backup to Matt Wieters, I'm not sure this is a bad thing either. So, Carlos Perez, I think, is an interesting backup solution at catcher.
Okay. So, you're asking me to pick between these two guys, right?
Yes.
Because you have picked such amazing candidates, and guys that I can't feel strongly about, even if I try. I'm going to go with Jae-hoon Ha just because of his name. Again, that's Jae-hoon Ha, the fine Irishman.
Thank God, because I really wanted Carlos Perez. The Orioles have been scooping up catchers left and right.
Oh, and it's done wonders for him. Yeah. we should waste a Rule 5 draft on that.
But the Orioles have been picking up catchers left and right for the past season, all knowing that Matt Wieters is going out the door. So Carlos Perez, I think they're going to pick him up. I think he is my best choice for someone that they're going to pick up this season.
Okay, so your logic, and I'm not mocking here.
Yes.
Your logic is quantity over quality in the catching position in case we lose Matt Wieters.
Again, it's all about resource allocation.
All right, duly noted. So, Scott, as usual, fantastic research, and I think you've done a bang-up job here. Can I shock you? I have a name to bring up here. Yeah. So you've got, what, eight guys?
Six guys here
that you think have a chance of being drafted, and you've been so kind enough to allow me to pick. I'm actually going to rescind all of those picks.
Okay.
I don't think any of those guys are going to get picked up by the Orioles in the Rule 5 draft.
Okay.
Let me tell you who is going to get picked up.
Okay.
You ready for this?
I'm ready for it.
Seth Frankoff.
Now, who is Seth Frankoff?
Seth Frankoff is a pitcher in the Oakland Athletics organization, and he has risen as high as AA. He was left unprotected in the Rule 5 draft. He had a really good season in advanced single A, basically the equivalent of Frederick. And that was, you have to keep in mind that these are the leagues that feed in to the PCL, which is a hitter's dream. So you take all those offensive numbers in the PCL and their feeder leagues, like the California League and et cetera, and you have to kind of keep in mind that they're all skewed towards the hitting.
Okay.
So when you see great stats, oh, fine, fantastic. But when you see middling stats, you have to kind of understand, this guy has the great stats. And he's a relief pitcher. In 48 appearances last year, he had a 2.78 ERA.
Right-handed pitcher, 6'5", 205 pounds, from UNC Wilmington.
Dude, I don't care how much he weighs. I don't care where he came from. I care about the numbers. Yes, you heard that right. Jake English on the Bird's Eye View podcast saying, I care about the numbers, Scott.
Okay.
His whip, a 1.076 in that 2013 campaign in the California League. Let me tell you why this guy is going to make it. Like most other pitchers in the minors, he started out as a starter, made the transition to the bullpen, where he really seemed to find his niche. And this is especially why I think he's going to be picked. Because he comes from the Oakland Athletics system. Jim Johnson was traded to the Athletics for Jamyle Weeks and a player to be named later. When the Orioles make their selection in the draft, they want to make sure that they can keep the resource that they draft. What better position can they be in to keep a guy, to draft a guy from an organization with which they can either keep him on the roster full-time, or when some emergency happens, when they need more roster maneuverability, they can go back to the A's and they can say, you know what, Oakland? This is going to be our other guy to be named later from the Jim Johnson trade. Stash him in the minors, move on, take a guy they care about, take a guy they like, keep him in the minors, bring him back whenever they want. This is the perfect fallback situation and a guy who is promising depth-wise in the minors. Thoughts?
Okay, I just want to point out, this is logical. This is actually very logical. So there's no way the Orioles are going to do it. But this is logical. Well done, sir. Well done. It was a good choice. But there's no way the Orioles are going to do it.
Okay. So, Fantasy Boss is as such. You've got the guys that you recommended.
Yes.
I made some picks there, but I really feel strongly about this Seth Frankoff fella.
Okay.
Let's go to the tiebreaker. I'm going to make a proposition.
Okay.
Okay. You feel free to shoot me down.
Okay.
Your projected tiebreaker was, will the Orioles participate in the Rule 5 draft or not?
Yes, and my question was, are you going to be in or are you going to be out?
Yeah, I feel like the both of us feel strongly about the fact that, yes, they're going to be involved.
Yes.
Right? Okay. I don't feel like that's quite fair.
Okay.
So here's my counterproposal. Again, feel free to shoot it down. I prefer the question of, will it be a member of the athletics organization? And I'm willing to take the yes, which means I take one of 20 of 29. And if you,
so you're letting me have the field.
You basically get the field.
I'm taking the field.
All right.
There's no question in my mind. I'm taking the field.
So the tiebreaker is as such. Do the Orioles select someone from the Oakland Athletics organization or the field?
Oh, I'm taking the field.
Okay.
There ain't no question in my mind.
And that's a legit tiebreaker?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So you've got your picks.
God, I can't wait for Elvis to come back next week.
I've got Seth Frankoff.
God, it's going to be amazing.
And you've got the field.
Oh, Elvis, I've missed you.
I've got to tell you, I'm impressed with this Fantasy Boss segment. I think you did a bang-up job. I didn't know about it until right before we turned on the mic. So my hat's off to you. Great research. Well done.
All right. Well, with that, I think it's time to take a quick break. Because it's time for the good, the bad, and the ugly.
All right, here we are. It's time for the good, the bad, and the ugly, one of our favorite segments here on Bird's Eye View. As per usual, I'm going to just throw this out here. Scott is way better at this than me. Way better. So I like to go first so that he can get the last word in. Believe me, it's well worth your time. So with the good, I'm going to hit the obvious, Scott. Totally obvious for this week. The good, when it comes to Birdland, when it comes to the Birdosphere, the good this week has to go to the Orioles spastics and their amazing video tip of the cap to Nate McLouth. I laughed, I cried some more. It was the perfect send-off for a guy that we have come to respect and love so much for his involvement in that magical 2012 season. My hat is off to you, Orioles spastics. That was, it was really something.
I agree. Totally. Hats off. Spastics. Great job. Thank you for coming out of hibernation and actually doing something Orioles related. You should have started like 3 or 4 weeks ago after the Redskins season was over.
Ooh. Yikes.
Let's just hope next year RG3 breaks his leg earlier.
Oh, geez. Okay, so that's my good. Scott, what do you have going on this week for your good?
My good actually for the week is going to go to Peter Schmuck. And I'm not really fond of giving props to Baltimore Sun writers, but in this case, Peter Schmuck did put his neck out there a little bit, basically saying and reporting that there has been a reshifting in the warehouse with the Angelos family. It was interesting. Once that article went up within a half an hour, there was an immediate update to that article from the Angelos family saying here was an interview. So it obviously rankled rank and file within the Orioles organization. It'll be interesting to see if Mr. Schmuck stays in the warehouse, not so much for this offseason, but into next season as well. But kudos to you, Peter Schmuck, for actually speaking your mind, for letting Baltimore fans know what actually is going on, and for stirring the pot and not just allowing the Orioles to be the Orioles.
You know, I will say... you know, I'm not sure that I love the... I'm not sure I love the story because I think it's much ado about nothing. But for the Sun, who's been criticized for being a lapdog of the Orioles...
Correct.
This is definitely a shot across the bow, and you got to love that.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm coming from. I'm not saying it's a great article. I'm not saying it's a bad article. But it's news reporting, and that's the kind of news reporting that I wanted to know and that what Baltimore fans would want to know.
Okay. I love it. Can I move on to my bad?
Go ahead.
My bad this week is for the occupant of the Whambulance. My bad this week is for someone who desperately needs to remove some sand from a certain piece of anatomy, and that is Adrian Peterson. Okay? After the loss, the Vikings were handed, he went to the Twitters, and he called out Baltimore Ravens fans for being... for being the worst fan base he's encountered for the fact that they threw snowballs at him. And I can't for a second excuse the act of throwing snowballs at an opposing player. I can't. That is low, it is classless, and it's something that any fan base should be ashamed of. However, Adrian Peterson crying on Twitter after a loss is sour grapes, it's classless, and it's low. And that's bad this week. And I don't care about the fact that people compare that to Torrey Smith making a similar claim against the New England Patriot fans after a game where he got pelted with snow. That's fine. Call him out all you want. I am calling out Adrian Peterson for crying on Twitter after you lose. If your point is legitimate, if it's not, it still sounds like whining after you lose.
So, Adrian Peterson, you're on notice?
He's not on notice because he's not ugly. It's just bad. Okay. It's just bad.
Well, my bad actually is going on notice, and I've already made it well that there are notice. And that's, well, that's you, Baltimore sports fans. Baltimore sports fans, I cannot believe you harped on the Mike Tomlin situation for not just Friday, not just Monday, not just Tuesday, not just Wednesday, not just Thursday. But
can you not do the LeBron rings thing?
Well, okay. But you're still harping about the Tomlin situation. You're still harping of, oh, well, Mike Tomlin would stepped on the field and stopped Jacoby Jones there. And, oh, well, Mike Tomlin did it on purpose. And, oh, well, you know, he's never done that before. So he obviously did it against the Ravens. Would you stop? You are making yourself seem foolish. And look, I understand that this is, you know, this is your rival and stuff like that, but don't go on sports radio and make yourself look like a fool. You people are fools. You fall into the trap all the time. Get over yourself. Stop talking about the situation. Move on. What you should be talking about is, why was Ray Rice not able to run with more efficacy? Why is our offensive line still doing so poor? Why are our wide receivers still dropping balls? Instead, you're talking about Mike Tomlin. Why are the Ravens not effective in the red zone? Why is Joe Flacco overthrowing balls? No, instead you're talking about why Mike Tomlin is doing a double step on the sidelines. So Ravens fans, you're on notice. Get your head in the game.
Scott, I can't believe it. I can't believe that you would call out Baltimore sports fans. People who love their team. People who love the same team that we love. Scott, I can't believe that you would be such a turncoat as to rag on Baltimore sports fans to make them the bad for your good, bad, and ugly. Dude, that's awful. Can I move on to my ugly?
Yes, you can.
All right. My ugly this week, Baltimore sports fans. Specifically, my ugly this week, Oriole fans. And you know what? I got to throw it out there, Scott. I'm in that club. So my ugly this week is me and other Baltimore Oriole fans for being so damn impatient, for being so damn entitled, for being so wound up about the fact that nothing has happened yet, when, for all intents and purposes, it is early in the offseason. Look, I understand the impatience. I do, because I'm angry. I'm angry with the club. I'm angry at the club because I feel like they're going to waste every opportunity we have before the Orioles to compete, and that we're wasting the prime years of certain careers, and that we're going to get to a point where the window closes on contention, and we're going to be right back where we were, trying to grow the arms and buy the bats in absentia while the real teams go and they play. Look, I get all that. But if you have paid attention to social media in the last 2 weeks, we're ridiculous. And I say we because I don't want to make it sound like I'm othering myself. I don't want to make it sound like I'm trying to be all high and mighty in comparison to these guys. This is me and a bunch of other Oriole fans. We're being ridiculous. Look, I know it hurts. I know it's scary right now. And that's the thing. We're scared that next season is going to suck. We're scared that we're going to turn back to the previous years. I get it. But you guys are being awful to the club. They can do no right. And frankly, if you expect them to sign a Chew or somebody that's just going to be the savior of this organization, going to be the savior of this offseason, going to make everything right about 2014, you're setting yourself up for failure. I am setting myself up for failure. So I'm going to say, in a very self-aware and somewhat self-judgmental way, Oriole fans who are cynical and who are angry and who are already lighting the torches and gathering the pitchforks, you're on notice.
You know, you really kind of set me better up on this, because there's a reason why you Orioles fans were upset. And that's where my ugly comes for this week. There's a reason Orioles fans are so upset with what has happened, and that's one person and one person only. Jamile Weeks. And I know people are thinking right now, how can Jamile Weeks be your ugly? He hasn't even played a game for the Orioles.
And have you seen those dreads? Awesome.
Okay, first of all, no. Dreads are not awesome. That's what you could be, that's why Torrey Smith had to cut his. Jamile, whatever.
Let's call the whole thing off.
Let's call the whole thing off. If I could get into a time machine, I would go back in time, slap your mother across the face for calling you Jamile or Jamile. That is the worst name in the world that I could ever think of for being traded for Jim Johnson. How dare you be called that? How dare you, sir? I wake up in the morning, and I'm looking at it saying, oh, I bet Jim Johnson got traded, and I'm looking for Andre Ethier or someone cool sending, and I come across the name of Jamile Weeks. And the first thing I have to do is go into Google and say, who the hell is Jamile Weeks?
Whoa. I'm going to stop you.
No, you do not stop me
here.
That
is completely disrespectful to who the hell is Steve Pierce.
That's true.
That mantle has already been taken, sir. You step back. Who is Jamile Weeks?
Who is Jamile Weeks? So I have to type in, who is Jamile Weeks? And up pops Baseball Reference, and I look at his stats, and I said, oh, he's a schmuck. So let me get this straight. We traded a closer that had over 100 saves over two seasons for a schmuck with dreads. Man, I tell you what, that's why baseball fans are upset. That's why Orioles fans are upset right now, because we just traded away one of our trade prospects for a person named Jamile or Jamile or whatever. I'm so upset that I can't even make a pun like the Baltimoreans. So, Jamile, you're on notice. You're going to have to come onto this team, hit 50 home runs for me even to take you out of that category of ugly. You're ugly. You took away my foo. Make it better.
This is why you go last.
Yeah, by now.
Your rants are superior.
Yeah.
If not...
Illogical.
Yes. Wow. I can't follow that with anything.
Personally, I like the whole aspect of going back in time and slapping his mother.
not for being a terrible baseball player, but for naming him something stupid.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. We're going to have to come up with another moniker for him, because who the hell is Jamile Weeks is already taken by Steve Pierce. So that's your homework.
Can we just go with why Jamile Weeks?
All right. I like your homework for this 2 weeks, Scotty, is to come up with a new name for Jamile Weeks, which is both disrespectful and mocking without being too over the edge that we can't say it every week.
So it can't be racist.
That is for sure.
Okay. This is going to take me some effort then.
All right, that is the good, the bad, and the ugly for this week. Scott, is there anything else that we can get into in this incredibly long podcast?
No. For those individuals that actually stuck out through the whole thing, congratulations. Your prize will be sent in the mail to you. We're going to watch over those winter meetings. We'll be posting on birdseyeviewbaltimore.com and also baltimoresportsreport.com regarding any updates that we see at the winter meetings and any sarcastic, cynical, or observations that we want to post about. So follow us at Bird's Eye View BAL, and remember to rate us on iTunes at the end of the show, because, heck, you'll be entered in that great contest to win in Orioles Magazine this week for the Happy Holidays contest.
Now, let's give the listeners some opportunity to prove that they stuck it out through this self-loathing experience of listening to Bird's Eye View since we ran so long this week. You remember the Bevies episode?
I do.
Remember the Bevies episode? At the end, you threw it out there, hey, say this word or tweet this word to us and we'll know that you made it. We actually got a lot of feedback with that. So, Scott, off the top of your head, as you drink your bourbon, I want you to come up with some random word that the listeners can tweet to us to let us know they made it all the way through this horrifically long edition of Bird's Eye View. All right, I'm going to give you a countdown to 3, 2, 1. And when I say go, I want to hear this. I want to hear this random word. Okay, so here we go. 3, 2, 1, go.
Resource allocation.
That's perfect. Well, that, sorry we ran a little long this week. That's what happens when we don't get together for 2 weeks. But, hey, if the Orioles manage to do something, maybe we'll go back to a weekly schedule. And with that, Baltimore and beyond, I bid you a fond adieu.
Good night, Baltimore.